The sermon for today is the moral nuking of our society. In Psalm chapter 11, verse 3, we have the psalmist speaking. It says, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? This verse invokes a picture of good men wringing their hands because they don't know what to do. And that is an accurate picture of what's going on in our society today. Now, a foundation is something to build on. On the foundation, we build the structure. The structure we're going to talk about today is society. The foundation of society is marriage. But what if that foundation is destroyed? What then? What has happened to our society? Once it was strong, but today it's in tatters. What can be done to restore society again? We will begin with a comparison of the composition of matter to the composition of society. Now, the foundation of matter is the atom made up of neutrons and protons in its nucleus. And so it is. No atom, no matter, no world, and no universe, because it's all made up of atoms. In the same way, the family unit is the atom of society, with marriage as its nucleus. That nucleus being made up of not neutrons and protons, but one male and one female by the design of God. Now, God gave me this illustration when I was preparing for my daughter's wedding sermon. Now, I hope that you will listen me out and can follow my thought and understand what I'm trying to say. Again, as the atom is the foundation of matter with neutrons and protons at its nucleus, so the institution of marriage is the nucleus of society. Now, Satan has got it figured out and got it figured out right that if he can split apart the nucleus, the fabric will come apart. It will collapse. And isn't that exactly what we're seeing happening in our society today? Now, the term nuclear means having to do with the nuclei. You know, usually when we talk about nuclear, we think about fantastic power, and that's true. But we're thinking this morning in the sense of the nuclear, or of having to do with the nucleus. And in that sense, our society is indeed getting nuked. It's getting torn apart at its nucleus. Not by Iran, no, but by Satan himself. According to Encyclopedia Britannica, dated 1995, 50% of marriages in America end in divorce. Now, I realize that perhaps that needs updated, but allow me to use it, if you will, for our purposes here today. Now, if 50% of the atoms of matter in America would be split by nuclear fission, like the atoms of society, the homes of society, America would be in ruins. So if the material landscape would mirror accurately the moral landscape of our country, or of our society, America the beautiful would be no more. The enemies of the West would be happy indeed, because America would be reduced to scorched earth. Well, the enemy has been very successful at destroying society by the nucleus. Not from the outside in, but from the inside out. Now, according to my research in atomic reaction, the way this whole process starts is a neutron is cannoned into the nucleus of an atom of uranium, breaking the strongest force on Earth between the neutrons and the protons, splitting them apart, creating a reaction that cannons more free neutrons into surrounding atoms. This releases heat energy a million times greater than normal combustion or chemical reaction. So Satan attacks the home with his negatively charged neutrons. You know, like the negative terminal of a battery. You know what happens when the two terminals come together? It makes the fire fly. And that's exactly what is happening in many homes in our society today. Satan uses his negative neutrons of lust, of jealousy, of anger, of selfishness, of alcohol and drug abuse, and the list goes on and on. He cannons those into the marriage relationships of men and women today to destroy the nucleus of the home. Now, one interesting similarity in relation to this thing of a nuclear reaction, this thing of the free neutrons, you know, in a divorce, we end up with two divorcees that are now available, possibly for another marriage union. And so many unions, many marriage unions, become victims of other broken unions. And there's just a chain reaction going on here. And it's just very much like the reaction we see in nuclear energy, in the nuclear reaction. In addition, in nuclear fallout, there's lots of radiation. that is capable of sickening anyone in its path, and it's known to cause birth defects in the next generation. So the victims of marriage fission get scorched and scarred. You know, man thinks that they can remake the rules and, you know, I can get through this. I can handle this. I'll be able to make it all right. But, you know, when a person begins to grapple with that kind of a situation, trying to deal with it in their own lives, they discover that just like nuclear reaction, this is unconventional. It's unconventional. It's not a normal separation. And it's because that God has decreed that marriage is for life. When we mess with the laws of God, there's a tremendous price to pay. You know, the next generation gets hit with the radioactive waste that's spewing out of these broken homes, these broken marriages. And many of those young people, they end up becoming maimed and deformed and sickened, leaving them perhaps totally unprepared to face real life. Again, because of that radioactive waste that is spewing out of those broken homes and broken marriages. We are indeed in nuclear fallout today. Our society is getting nuked, and Satan has got it figured out that the best way to take a society to hell is by destroying it from the inside out, by destroying the nucleus of marriage. All right, the next part of our sermon is in relation to divorce and the lowering of the dress standard of our society. Now, the correlation between divorce and the lowering of the dress standard, especially for women. Now, this part of the sermon, I understand that there's a lot of you out there that are not going to be able to absorb what I have to say about this subject. And I want you to understand that I'm not trying to force anything down anybody's throat. All that I ask is that you listen to me out, and you talk to God about it. You talk to your husband, you talk to your wife, you discuss it with your church, and see if God has anything in this for you. You can take it or leave it, but I can do no less than speak what I feel that God has laid on my heart in this subject. You know, we can never solve a problem by ignoring the issues involved. So that's the approach I'm going to take as we look at this problem of our society. Now, in the 60s and 70s, when the standard of modesty plummeted, the divorce rate skyrocketed. As the hemlines rose, the divorces rose with it. Now, I realize it's not to say that the sole cause of the divorce rate rise was the change of the standard of modesty. Perhaps both of these are expressions of the same spiritual moral decline. Nevertheless, I believe that we have given Satan another handle by which to cannon free neutrons into the marriage unions of men and women today. It is little wonder that the apostle says that women need to dress modestly. And no, it's not because he hated women, but it was because he loved the church, he loved society, he loved the family unit. Now, we need to look at a passage here, 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 8. Here the apostle begins, and he begins with talking to men, and then in verse 9 he talks to women. So we'll read here, 2 Timothy 2, 8. I will therefore that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety. And then in 1 Timothy 2, 9, A, which becometh women professing godliness with good works. Now, it is the responsibility of men in the church and society to live prayerful, spirit-guided lives with holy or pure thoughts and pure eyes and pure hands. I think that's what he's saying there in 1 Timothy 2:8. I will therefore that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. By the same token, he says, in like manner also that women. By the same token, it is women's part in this thing of strong marriages and strong homes and a strong society. One of women's parts is to dress modestly, like morally upright Christians should. As it says there, which becometh women professing godliness with good works. It says, with shamefacedness and sobriety. In other words, with proper reserve towards men. That's the connotation of that passage. Now, there's something wrong with the typical American picture of quoting the words of the songwriter when he says, "Baby's got her blue jeans on." You know, down by the traffic light, everybody's looking. And no, she can't help the way she's made. Nor is there anything wrong with the way that she's made. She was made perfect. She was a creation of God. She was made in the image of God. But that doesn't necessitate her putting her body on display out on the street in that way. Nor is it necessary, nor does that require the cleavage and exposure of bare limbs that greet men today. Now, I will acknowledge this, that men are as responsible for this immodesty as much as the women are today, because the women do it because shallow men love it. Now, I know you're going to say, "Grandpa, it's time that you catch up with the times and get real." But tell me, why would any grandpa or grandma or young man or young woman want to be a part of the moral nuking of a society? If we keep doing what we're doing, we'll keep getting what we're getting. I believe it's time that evangelical Christians awaken to the fact that modesty cannot be determined by the norms of a fashion-dominated society, but must be determined by the normal impulses of men and women. Now, you may choose to disagree, but my conviction is that God's standard of modesty for women is, in brief, in just a few words, the body covered with loose-fitting clothes. Let me repeat that. I believe that God's standard of modesty for women is, in brief, the body covered with loose-fitting clothes. I believe this morning that Christian modesty would rob Satan of a powerful weapon in his nuclear arsenal, a powerful weapon that he uses to destroy the homes of men and women today. Now, the next part of the sermon, we'd like to talk about women in the workforce and how that has affected the divorce and remarriage problem as well. Now, just as on the matter of modesty, the Bible speaks clearly on this question as well. You know, there's no need to base our position on this matter on mere human reasoning. The apostle instructs young women as follows: to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. That is in the book of Titus, chapter 2, verse 5. So, break that down a little bit. The word chaste means holy, pure, modest. And just like it says, keepers at home, it simply means to be a stay-at-home person. That's what that word means. The word, the Greek word that's translated keepers at home. That term was used, interestingly enough, in a contemptuous way of a stay-at-home soldier. Now, how much good would a stay-at-home soldier be? Well, it's entirely the opposite of the scenario here with mothers in the home. Mothers in the home will do a lot of good. And it's the plan of God that mothers that have children be stay-at-home moms. And then again, the apostle says, "I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully." And again, this is in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 14. Now, there's some interesting, if you look at the original Greek words there, the word for house is, the best I can pronounce it, is oikos. And the word for ruler is despotine. So, it's something like this. The mother, the younger women, Paul encourages them to marry and to have a family, and they're responsible to be the despot of the house when the husband is away making a living. Now, we understand that the word despot is a negative term today, but what it simply means is to be the ruler of the house while the father is away making a living, while father is away working. The New Testament teaching is clear. The married woman with children needs to be a stay-at-home mom. And then there's the beautiful passage that we could look at, or that we will look at, in relation to the virtuous woman. Proverbs 31, verse 10. Here's Solomon's description of the stay-at-home mom and the traditional role of the wife being a housewife and a keeper at home. And it's a few verses here, but I believe it's beautiful and it's so applicable, and I'm going to read it. Proverbs 31, verse 10. "Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax, and worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant's ships. She bringeth her food from afar. She riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household, and a portion to her maidens. She considereth a field, and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hands she planteth a vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength, and strengtheneth her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchant. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children arise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands. Let her own works praise her in the gates. Now Solomon's description here of the virtuous woman is excellent reading, and I believe it ought to be posted in every house, especially every Christian home ought to have it posted on the wall. Now you say the stay-at-home mom doesn't have a career? You look at that passage of scripture, sure she has a career. But it's wherever her children are. Wherever her children are, that is where her career is. You know, she is the matron. They are her helpers. They learn to become productive citizens in that way. You know, they don't grow up to fill our prisons, no. Because they know love. They have a mom, a real one, who cares enough to raise them. One like I had, who was not only there for us, but she was there with us. And she cared enough to smack my backside when I needed it, when I was a little rebellious scamp. You know, and she's a large part of what I am today. And people today say that we can't make it on only one income. Really? Do the math. When you look at the daycare expense, the extra vehicle, the extra fuel, and all of that, it really doesn't figure out as good as many people think it does. And what about the economy? What would the unemployment rate look like if mothers stayed home? What about the reduced taxes because of not needing to foot the tab for delinquent youngsters, etc., etc.? You know, the entire society picks up the tab. There's no free lunch. It's like a ball and chain that holds us down. And what if it would make a difference between society going to hell or our youngsters making it to heaven instead? Are you and I willing to pay the price and do what we can to make the difference? You know, the daily rub of men and women at work naturally makes new couples. You know, just like young people socializing makes couples. You know, for singles, that's a good thing. It's right, and they need, it's wonderful if they can mingle with good, other good young people and find marriage companions and you know, settle down, get married, and raise a family. That's the best thing for society. But for marrieds, it's not. You know, when men and women socialize enough to become one emotionally, they often soon become one physically. And boom, another home gets nuked. In conclusion, who are the greatest victims of this collapse of society, of the nuking of the homes of our society? The children are the greatest victims, are they not? You know, it's like the three boys who came to the principal's office at school. And they needed some advice. They said, we've got to make a decision today. And the oldest one looked up at the principal, and with his lip quivering, he said, we're going to have to make a decision. We're going to have to decide whether we're going to live with our mom or whether we're going to live with our daddy. And we want to live with both of them. How sad. The plight of many children today. Is it any wonder that we have young people that are dizzy and confused and unprepared for life? Now this would be akin, you know, children waking up to find out that mom and dad are getting a divorce would be akin to Christians waking up to discover that God and Jesus were going to get a divorce, or that Jesus decided he'd had enough, he was divorcing the church. You know, in reality, The daddy in the home represents God. He's a figure of God to these young children, and the mother either of Christ or perhaps of the church. And so, can we grasp what these young minds are actually trying to deal with, and the shock and the repercussions of these broken marriages and broken homes? Little wonder that we see the chaos that we do. We have a young generation that's drowning in the nuclear waste of these broken marriages and broken homes. And so now, where do we go from here? God has a better way for us. It's experiencing the beauty of marriage. Strong unions, strong homes, and strong churches, and a strong society. But the question is, who is willing to stand up and make a difference? Who is willing to take a stand? Who is willing to make the sacrifices necessary so that this can be realized? Thank you for listening.